We're on Daf Yudam and Beis, right before the Mishnah, two lines above the Mishnah, towards the end of the line. Omer Abimani. Right? Really, okay, just capping up our discussion. Omer Abimani, Godol HaKoyle Kriya Shema Be'oinosa, Yoyse Me'a Oisek Be'toyor. Reciting Kriya Shema at the right time is greater than learning Torah. Learning Torah is the greatest mitzvah, we're told it's the greatest mitzvah there is. But the Gemara has a very solid inference from the Mishnah. Midiktani, what did our Mishnah say? The Mishnah said, HaKoyle Mikan Ve'elach Lo Hipsid. If a person missed the Zman of Kriya Shema, so if he says it afterwards, it's okay. Ka'odam ha-koyre ba-toyra. It's like you're learning Torah. Meaning, alright, you missed Kriya Shema, but it's like learning Torah, which implies you can get second best. Michlau de koyre ba-inasa adif. This implies that reading it at the right time is greater. That's surprising, but it's a very solid inference. The Mishnah seems to say that. Saying Kriya Shema at the right time is best. Second best is learning reading it as Torah afterwards. Now, that seems to go against what we learned, that learning Torah is the greatest mitzvah of all.
It's the weakest mitzvah of all.
What's that?
It's the weakest mitzvah of all.
What do you mean?
That if you have a mitzvah that only you can do, any mitzvah that only you can do, then that cuts any kriya shema.
So actually, what you're doing is you are bolstering the difficulty. Yeah, we're in here. Oh, I'm sorry. Yeah,
okay.
I'm sorry. Okay. So you're actually bolstering the difficulty, because here's another example where we see a conflict. On the one hand, we say learning Torah is the greatest mitzvah of all. On the other hand, first we're seeing here, Kriya Shema at the right time is more important. And what you're noting, that any mitzvah that comes up that you can't, no one else can do, overrides learning Torah.
Seems to me you're not saying, you could make an argument, you're not saying that reciting Shema is greater than learning Torah. It's saying, if you don't recite Shema on this time, that's done.
Right.
But if you recite Shema, or anything else,
later,
you credit the right word to Torah.
Yeah.
In other words, you can't join the two.
Okay, so you're saying that we're not discussing this Zman Kriya Shema anymore. That what's gone is gone, and now you can do it as Torah. Right, but at the same time, the implication does seem to be that now it's Torah learning. You know, if you do it after this Zman, you got Torah learning. Yeah.
Totally.
So, what?
Totally.
That's right. So the truth is, we have to understand something. Yes, if we analyze a little more, we'll come up with more instances that you see it conflicting back and forth. You just cited another instance where we see that other mitzvahs seem to come first, be greater than learning Torah. On the other hand, we say Torah is greater than pikuach nefesh, right? Saving lives. Torah is greater than saving lives. In fact, Purim. This is a less popular thing to quote in the context of Purim. What does it say? The last words of the Megillah are, Ratzui l'roivechov. Mordechai was well liked by most of his brethren. Most of his brethren. Who's most? The Chachamim note that. Why most? Why not all? Chachamim note that in the eyes of his colleagues, his status had dropped. Why? His colleagues were the other members of the Sanhedrin. He wasn't one of them anymore. He was already busy with
politics
and but in Mordechai's level, what was that politics? I mean, he was busy with running the cloud. But the people in Sanhedrin said, right, he's not what he used to be. Oh well. What's that? In a way. We know that most of the time Moshe Rabbeinu was Michutz Lamachane, right, sitting by himself in the Mishkan. He would come when he had what to teach. Most of his interaction with the cloud was teaching. Direct. Or bringing the word of Hashem. So it seems to go back and forth. So what is greater? So the truth is, learning Torah is the greatest of mitzvahs. But, there's a big but. And that's what puts all these things into perspective. Let's say you say that a certain business is very lucrative. Okay? So, the more you invest in this merchandise, let's say we're talking about wine. Okay? The more you invest in wine, the more money you'll make. The more wine you buy, the more money you'll make. So therefore, a person might say, people advise him, you should invest in a good, big plant, right, with good vats. So why should I go for the grade A, which is going to leave me with less money to buy wine? I'll take very low quality vats, very low quality barrels, very low quality everything. I'll have more money for wine. And then the other guy says, no, I'm going to go for the most quality equipment, even if I'll have a bit less money to invest in wine. Who's going to do better? What's that?
Depends on the neighborhood.
On the okay, but as if a person is dealing with low quality equipment, then everything he buys is not going to list that well as well, etc., etc., right?
It's going to sell cheaper.
What's that?
It's
going to sell cheaper. Okay, but it's not going to last that long. It's not going to last as long. So the point is, you have to invest in the conditions. Also, a person also might not want to invest money in office equipment. Why should I invest money in establishing an office? I can spend the money on merchandise and do better. But the answer is no. An office is what's very much going to facilitate the sales of your merchandise. So certainly, there's a lot of things you have to invest in around the merchandise in order to set the merchandise up in the best way possible.
Infrastructure.
Oh. So...
research and development.
What's that? Right. Why waste money on that if you can just buy merchandise? So the answer is definitely, the question is, what setting is the merchandise in that's going to make a very big difference for the success of your business? So here also, certainly we say, Torah is the greatest mitzvah of all. But when you're ready to retain the Torah, the question is, where are you retaining it? In what sort of vessels? And that depends on who you are. The more you are, the more value your Torah is going to have. And therefore, Torah certainly has to be complemented by all the other mitzvahs. That's what sets the value of the Torah. For example, Kriya Shema. I'm talking about Kriya Shema at its right time. We'll talk about a person. Essentially, the mitzvah of learning Torah is greater. But a person who's mekayim the mitzvah of Kriya Shema ups the whole stock of his wine. It ups the whole value of his wine, of his Torah. The Kabbal Malch HaShemayim. When a person is a true servant of Hashem, the Torah that he learns is worth so much more. It's of so much higher quality. So therefore, learning Torah is essentially the most important mitzvah. But the value of the Torah you learn depends on who you are. Who you are will depend on many of the other mitzvahs you're busy doing, which are shaping your personality and shaping who you are. The closer a person is to Hashem, for example, the more his Torah is worth.
That learning Torah is more important than Kriya Shema. Some people will
be dropping Kriya Shema and learning Torah. Exactly. That's the point that our Gemara is making. I don't think so. Because only learning Torah, not reciting Kriya Shema, not doing anything else, is like a person who buys all the wine and has nowhere to store it, no office with which to run it, etc., etc. His business is going to be a failure. You have to create the right conditions for the Torah in order for the Torah to have its value. And therefore, for example, right, the Gemara says, Katam Chakam Shein by Das. Das means the proper Torah sensitivities in this context. A Talmud Chacham without the proper Torah sensitivities is full of Torah. What does Chazal say? Nevela Teva Imenu. A stinking carcass is better than him. You take the wine, you take all that valuable wine, and you have nowhere to store it. So you keep it in the local garbage dump. It stinks. A person can make a mess out of his Torah also. The value of the Torah is determined by who you are. Now, I'll note that actually there is an approach. Rav Shimon Bar Yochai didn't stop learning for anything, not even Kriya Shema. But that was talking about a different realm that we don't take into account in practical terms. Okay, we begin the next Mishnah. Beis Shammai Oim. Beis Shammai say, Ba'erev kol odom yate v'yikra. In the evening, how does the Torah command you to recite Kriya Shema in the evening? It says, when you lie down, right? And when you wake up, and when you get up in the morning. So therefore, they say, everyone should lie down to recite Kriya Shema in the evening. B'shachtecha. It says, when you lie down. Ubaboyke yamoid. And in the morning, you should recite Kriya Shema standing. Shenema, because it says in the pasuk, Ubeshach becha uvkumecha. When you lie down and when you get up. Beisham, I take that quite literally, and therefore, you should be lying down at Ma'ariv Kriya Shema and standing at the morning Kriya Shema. Beisilaloimim, Beisilal say no. Kol adam kere kedakar. You recite Kriya Shema in whatever state you're in. Shenema, as it says in the pasuk, uvelech techovadarech. That says you recite Kriya Shema in sitting in your home or while walking or while going on the road, which implies that as you're just traveling along, you say Kriya Shema as is without stopping, as you're walking, as you're moving.
Question. So, it doesn't say that you should recite Kriya Shema.
Not really. We do apply this to words of Torah, but the pasuk has a double meaning. Meaning, what is the source for the mitzvah of Kriya Shema? The source of the mitzvah of Kriya Shema is these very words. V'hayu advar ma'ele, the Torah says these things should be on your heart or in your mind. Of your al vavecha, v'shinantam vavecha, etc. V'dibatavam, you should speak in them. When you're sitting at home, when you're going on the road, when you lie down, when you get up. So, in the narrower sense, it's talking about these things, i.e. Kriya Shema. This is in the parasha of Kriya Shema. In the broader sense, we apply it to Divrei Torah in general. But most directly, it's certainly referring to Kriya Shema. So therefore, if it says that you can do it while you are in travel, so obviously it doesn't make a difference whether you're sitting down, lying, standing, etc. Im kein lomo ne'emar. So why does the Torah say when you lie down and when you get up? By now we should know the answer to that. It's denoting the time for Kriya Shema. At the time when people lie down, and at the time when people get up. But what actual state should you be, position should you be when you say Kriya Shema? You can be sitting at home, traveling on the road, etc.
Just to find out from the words, it seems to be Krishna itself, the Yodhari Mahele, right? So that's referring to everything which is above. And so, in other words, when you have the mezuzah, or when you have the tefillin, or whatever it is, that or the, even the mitzvah of Krishna, it seems like it should be from Shema until Odecha. And then it says, and then it's like parenthetical phrase, which is above. All these things, you know, this is what you should do with them.
So in other words, you're asking, why is V'hayu Adam Ma'ela actually part of what we have to recite?
What
you're asking.
It's saying, like, these things need to be, you know, it seems like that's, basically, it's two things. It's
you're in good company.
Believing Hashem, and
you're in good company.
Loving Hashem, you know.
Yeah, you're in good company. We'll see Tanaim who say what you said later in the second parak. The machloek is really until where the essential chiyuv is. Some understand it the way you're saying. When it says V'hayu Adam Ma'ela, it means you should say all of the above. Which means that the chiyuv of Kriya Shema begins with Shema, ends with Ma'idecha.
Yeah.
We'll see. But it's machlokes. We'll see. We'll see a few opinions on that. And it's subject to discussion. We'll see. Okay. So we have a machlokes. According to Beishamai, you have to dafka be lying down at Ma'ariv, dafka be standing at Shacharis. Beisilal say no, however which way. So Omar Abitav. So we bring the point home in a colorful way. Omar Abitarfin says, Ani hayisi baba derech. I was traveling on the road, and it was night time, it was time for Ma'ariv. V'teisi likrois kedivrei Beishamai. And I lie down to say Kriya Shema as Beishamai hold. Abitarfin was a student of Beishamai. V'sikanti ba'atzmi b'pnei alistim. And I endangered myself. It was dangerous to get off your horse and get on the ground at night. I was in danger because of robbers. So Amar Ulai, so they told him, you deserve that danger. Kedai ha'yisalachum v'atzmacha. You deserved to actually be killed. Shavat al-divrei Beisilal. For having transgressed what Beisilal said. This is doubly surprising because, first of all, ad kedai kach, machlekes about Kriya Shema. And second of all, Beisilal are mekel. Beishamai are machmir. He's following the chumrah.
Like you said, he's his rosh.
What's that? And was a Talmud of theirs.
But he also says you can be in any position.
Right. So what's the problem?
The problem is other people might see that.
Oh, okay. So we'll see. Yeah, so we'll see. But whatever it is, we'll see here that yes, it was a very sharp reaction to Rabbi Tarfin being machmir in accordance with the Shita of Beis Shammai. Okay, but we'll leave that for now. We're going to get back to that in the Gemara. Now we go back to the initial machloikis. Seemingly, Beis Shammai and Beis Hillel are each based on a different pasuk, right? Beis Hillel are focusing on the pasuk that says when you travel on the road, when you're sitting at home, when you travel on the road, and they draw their shita from that, whatever position you're in. Beis Shammai are focusing on when you lie down and when you get up, and they're basing their shita on that, lying down and getting up specifically. Now, each one can't ignore the fact that the other one cited psukim, right? Everyone agrees that all those psukim appear. So what's each opinion going to do with the other's psukim? Bishlama Beis Hillel. So Beis Hillel are well understood. They already provided us with a neat package in the Mishnah. They explained their own psukim, and they also explained Beis Shammai's psukim, right? Beis Hillel said that when it says when you lie down and you get up, it's coming to denote the time. It's not coming to denote the position. So Beis Hillel are perfect. Blech t'chol v'derech implies you can do it even when you're on the go, whatever position you're in. B'shach b'chol k'mecha implies the time, doesn't imply the position. Elo Beis Shammai my time reloi amri k'Beis Hillel. But why don't Beis Shammai agree with Beis Hillel? How do they explain the pasuk that says that you recite Kriya Shema when traveling on the road? You have Gemara's here. So Amri loch Beis Shammai. Beis Shammai say Beis Hillel's explanation is not plausible. How did they explain away the pasuk that says B'shach b'chov k'mecha? They said, no, it doesn't mean the position. It's not coming to tell you when you lie down specifically. It means to say when you go to sleep, the time when you lie down, the time when you get up, but not lying down and standing up per se. So Beis Shammai say, in Keni Mekaba Baiku Be'erev, if the pasuk simply means to tell us the time of Kriya Shema, the pasuk should have said, say it in the morning and in the evening. Why does it say when you lie down and when you get up? My Bishach Bechov Kumecha. Why does it say it in this way, when you lie down and when you get up? So that implies Bishas Shchiva, Shchiva Mamish. Yes, he's supposed to say it at the time when you lie down, but we're supposed to actually say it lying down. Ubishas Kima, Kima Mamish. And yes, you're supposed to say it at the time when you get up, but you're supposed to actually say it standing up. Okay? So therefore, Beis Shammai say, Beis Hillel did not do a good job at explaining it away. And therefore, our pasuk stands. B'shach b'chol, when you lie down, and when you get up, quite literally. But, are they ignoring the pasuk that says that you do it, b'lech t'chol v'aderech, when you in your travels on the road? Beis Shammai, hayu v'lech t'chol v'aderech ma'ovid lehu. But what do Beis Shammai do with this pasuk that says, when you're traveling on the road? So the Gemara answers, Mi they say, no, that's not coming to imply the position that you say Kriya Shema in. That's coming to teach us a whole different halacha. And here we get into a very fundamental discussion. New principles it's coming to teach. L'chedetanya. The Braisa says as follows. The words b'shivtecha b'veisecha v'lechtecha v'aderech are coming to introduce halachas that actually we're going to see are principles in all areas of halacha. B'shivtecha b'veisecha, you recite Kriya Shema when you're sitting in your home. Prat la'oisek b'mitzvah, to the exclusion of a person who is engaged in a mitzvah. A person who is engaged in a mitzvah is exempt of Kriya Shema. This is the famous principle of Oisik b'mitzvah potur min ha-mitzvah. A person who is engaged in a mitzvah is exempt of any other mitzvahs that come his way. This is one of the sources. There are two, possibly three sources for this principle. This is one of the standard sources.
So we're asking like Beis Shammai in this case?
In this, we're going to see soon that they still agree with this. How did they learn two halachas out of this pasuk? We'll see. But Beis Shammai is saying everyone agrees that this is what you learn from these psukim. Uvelech techov aderech, And on you recite Kriya Shema on your travels on the road, prat lechosk, to the exclusion of a chosim. What's the significance of a chosim? Well, a chosim has a lot on his mind. You remember the day before your wedding? You had a lot on your mind. So a chosim has too much going on in his mind to be able to focus on Kriya Shema. And therefore, Mikan Amru, based on this, they said, Hakoines es habisula potor. A person who is marrying a virgin is potter from Kriya Shema. Es almane chayiv. If it's already a second timer, a person is marrying a widow, he's chayiv. Why? Because a person is marrying a virgin for the first time, his mind is very preoccupied, he's nervous, he's busy thinking about it, and therefore he's exempt. Okay, so let's know. There were two points stated in the Gemara. First of all, a person who's engaged in a mitzvah is patur. And second of all, separate point, a chassan whose mind is too wrapped up with what he has to do is exempted.
But that would include the marrying a widow.
What's that?
If the chassan is being married for the first time, it doesn't matter who you marry. You don't have the same preoccupation.
Okay, you're raising a point that I'm not so sure about. It seems from some sources, some of the Mefarshim seem to say that no, the point is especially that when marrying a widow, when marrying a virgin, there was always a certain level of suspense of finding the Mesulim. Yeah, finding the Mesulim. I'm not sure how that's going to work out with what we're going to see later.
Why did the Chassid sing he's also engaged in a mitzvah?
Okay, good question. I'm going to get to that in a minute. Let's just see what Rabbi Yaakov is asking.
What's the connection between the words and the drasha that's made for each one of them?
Oh, that's coming up. We'll see in the Gemara. Coming up.
Now, it's relatively unrelated.
Right. Now, in answer to your question, and this is an important point, Rav Mordechai is asking, why do we need a separate pasuk excluding a chassan? A chassan is also doing a mitzvah. Once we know that a person engaged in a mitzvah is exempt, a chassan is also exempt.
He's not doing the mitzvah yet.
Oh. Okay, we're talking about a chassan who's not doing the mitzvah right now. He's going to be married tonight. Right now, all he's doing is obsessing. That's all he's doing right now. He's sitting and thinking nervously about it. He's nervous about it.
This is Kriya Shema Ma'aretz.
What's that?
This is Kriya Shema Ma'aretz.
Okay. Yet, first of all, I'll say that the Poskim say that a person who's marrying today would already be potter from the Kriya Shema of Shacharis too. But besides that, even the Kriya Shema of Arvis, what's he actually doing? Let's say he's not actually going and marrying yet. Myriv came, there's another 2 hours till the wedding. He's not doing a mitzvah now. Certainly, if he's actually doing the mitzvah right now at the time of Myriv, we don't need another pasuk to exclude him. But here we're coming to add that even if he's not yet doing the mitzvah, got another 2 hours till the wedding, it's winter. Myriv is at 5, the wedding is called for 7. He's potter. Why? Because he's nervous. Because he's got too many things on his mind. He can't focus on it right now.
What's called the mitzvah anyway? Just the time he's out of the chuppah, or the time of the yichud, or is it like the whole party afterwards as well?
Yeah, it's the whole party. The whole process. Everything leading up to the actual cohabitation. The whole process. In fact, we'll see later that he's given 4 full days because, say, a young rookie is still and nervous and preoccupied. He's given 4 days. Okay. So, yeah, there's 2 distinct levels that we're adding here. First we're saying a person who's actually doing a mitzvah, and now we're adding a person who's just got his mind preoccupied. Now the Gemara asks Rabbi Yaakov's question. My mashma. Where do you see all this in the words? Pasuk said that you learn Kriya Shema, and you're sitting at home, and in your travels on the road. Where do we seem to exclude what? So Amar Av Papa said, well, ki derech. Well, when it talks about traveling on the road, ma derech rishus, just like a journey, is something optional. Not a chiyuv to travel anywhere, right? So Av Kol rishus. So we derive from that the Torah is actually saying, you know in what conditions you have to say Kriya Shema? When you're doing something optional. When you're on the road, that's optional, there's no mitzvah to travel. Then the Torah says you have to say Kriya Shema. So we derive from that those are the circumstances in which you have to recite Kriya Shema. This is Velech Techa V'Aderech. Soon we'll get back to Bishiv Techa V'Aderech. So the Gemara says, Don't worry, the Gemara is going to work it through slowly. The Gemara says, 1 minute. You're just saying that, well, traveling is an absolute example of an optional activity. Sometimes people have traveled for mitzvahs too, no? Why are you saying, well, if the Torah says you're lame when you're traveling, it's another way of saying you're lame when you're doing optional things. Is there no such thing as a person who travels for a mitzvah? Maybe the Torah is talking about a person who's traveling for a mitzvah. Person is on a pidyon shvuyim mission. Okay? And on the contrary, the Torah is saying, when you're traveling on the road, no matter what you're traveling for, you have to say Kriya Shema. Even if you're going for the biggest mitzvah in the world, going to build a Beis HaMikdash. So the Gemara says, no. You're right that the very fact that the Torah says you have to say Kriya Shema on the road does not imply that it's referring to an optional situation, but it's a little finer than that. Im kein lichtoiv rachmane b'sheves uveleches. We're noting the Torah doesn't just say you learn Kriya Shema when you're at home and when you're on the road. The Torah says you learn Kriya Shema. The Torah terms it a little funny. The Torah says in your sitting at home and in your travel on the road. So the Gemara is focusing now not on the road so much as the your. The Torah should just say, you say Kriya Shema at home or on the road. My b'shivtecha uvelechtecha. Why does the Torah say, you say Kriya Shema in your sitting at home and in your travel on the road? That's where we infer it from. B'sheves didach, when it's your sitting, meaning it's just you're at home and busy with your own affairs. Uveleches didach, and when it's your travel, when you're traveling for your own affairs, then hu demechayves. Then you are obligated to say Kriya Shema. So you're right, the stress is not so much on the at home or on the road. The stress is more on the v'shivtecha, in your sitting at home you have to say Kriya Shema. If you're doing it for your own purposes. In your travels you have to say Kriya Shema. If it's for your own purposes. Hade mitzvah p'tiris. But if it's not your travel, and if it's not your sitting, if you're engaged in a mitzvah, then you are exempt. Okay.
Can you say the same thing about Ushat Pachav Kumecha?
What's that?
Ushat Pachav Kumecha, that's also your lying down. You're getting up and you're lying down.
Yeah, you're lying down. It will be hard to say a lying down of a mitzvah.
Vishkiva, and...
Right. But how are you going to make that inference? You're right. You have the same implication there too. But there would a little be harder to exclude a lying down of a mitzvah. What lying down of a mitzvah is there?
Nisukkah.
What's that? Lying down in a sukkah? Okay, we'll have to see why a person who's sitting in a sukkah is not potter mikol ha'tera kula. You're asking a question. I'm going to rephrase what you're saying. Person, we just learned the principle of oisik b'mitzvah potter min ha'mitzvah. So you know what, Rabbi Yisai, I'm going to reveal now some of my concealed piety. Under my shirt, I'm wearing tzitzis. You hear that? I'm a humble guy, so I keep it under my shirt. But I got tzitzis on. Does that exempt me from doing any mitzvah that comes my way? What about when I'm wearing tefillin? Is that, as long as I'm wearing tefillin, I'm potter. Why daven? Once you got the tefillin on, sit down and read. Well, you're asking. A person is sitting in a sukkah. That's it. No mitzvahs. No brachas in the sukkah. Okay, we'll have to see. What? That's true. But the truth is that's kind of included in the chasen idea. Good. Okay, you resolved your own question. It's almost exactly what the Rishonim say. The Rishonim say that the Torah is oisik b'mitzvah, not mekayim mitzvah. That's a Gemara's term. The Torah is for a person who's engaged in a mitzvah, or more accurately, person who is doing a mitzvah. Literally, person who's doing a mitzvah, not a person who's fulfilling a mitzvah. When you're wearing tzitzis, you're fulfilling a mitzvah, but you're not doing one. The Torah is for a person who's doing a mitzvah actively. What were you going to say? Was that answer your question? Oh, okay.
So preparing the strings for the tzitzit that were occupied in the knot, is that doing the mitzvah?
Preparing strings for tzitzis.
That's not a mitzvah.
What's that? Not a mitzvah. Why not?
It's a hachana mitzvah.
It's just a hachana. Okay. So we're getting onto another level of this discussion of the Rishonim too.
But tzitzis, it's the actual putting on.
The fulfillment of the mitzvah of tzitzis is the actual donning, right? But yet, the Rishonim do say, they put a lot of stress on the fact that we derive the concept of oisek mitzvah from the lechtecha laderech. When you're on your own travel, you're potter. When you're on a mitzvah travel, you're chayiv. I don't think of any possible scenario of a mitzvah travel. The travel is always a preparation for the mitzvah. It's not the fulfillment of the mitzvah itself. What mitzvah do you fulfill by traveling? The travel is always... But they're also, it's preparation for the mitzvah, right? It's enabling you. There's a ceremony, but that's not the mitzvah. The mitzvah is bringing the bikkurim to the Beis HaMikdash.
The bikkurim
will be the same thing as Aliyah L'Regel. I wonder if there's actually a mitzvah in the actual travel. I'm not sure. What? What's that?
Levayas Ames.
Okay, I hear. I hear. But generally, we can certainly say that, especially since it's explicit in Sukkah, that we exclude from this pasuk of Lechtecha Baderech Shluchei Mitzvah, people who are on their way to perform a mitzvah. They're on a mitzvah travel, meaning they're on their way to perform a mitzvah. So therefore we say that yes, once a person begins the process of even just preparing for a mitzvah, he's already included in this exemption. Another example is people digging a grave for a dead person. People digging a grave. What? Exactly. That's right. These are all Mishnayos coming up later in the third parak. Person digging a grave, there's no mitzvah to dig graves, there's a mitzvah to bury people. Right? So as long as you don't actually have the guy in your hands, no mitzvah. Yeah, you're potter. Because the exemption extends to the full mitzvah process. Not only to the mitzvah process, but it's even more than that. The Ram says, a person digging a grave inevitably sits down to rest. He takes a break here and there in the process. What's that? So he says that's also included in the exemption. All that, as long as you're in the process of doing the mitzvah, you're potter. We'll see. What's that? Oh, learning Torah is actually the exception to which we say that the way the chiyuv of Torah was set down was that anytime a mitzvah comes up that cannot be performed by anybody else, you must do it. And then we don't apply the concept of basic mitzvah.
Is it excluded by a drasha, or that's just like...
I believe that it's excluded by a drasha, I don't remember now. If I remember correctly, there is a drasha, but I don't remember what it is.
A specific mission on people who are carrying a mace.
No,
you said
mace.
Carrying a mace apart from
Right. But it also says, the ones who are carrying, but it also does say about the people digging the grave.
Yeah.
Right.
The whole process of carrying.
Right. That's right. Okay, we'll see more on this. Whatever it is, I'm saying the Olam is already touching on the sensitive points here. Okay. So now, the Gemara says... Yes, we infer from in your sitting in your house and in your travel on the road that you're only chayev if you're busy with your affairs, not if it's Hashem's sitting or Hashem's travels. So the Gemara says, "Yehachi afilu koines salmon enam." So one minute, you excluded a chassan because of the mitzvah he's going to be busy with. So why did he exclude a person who's marrying a widow? Marrying a widow is also a mitzvah. And the Gemara answers no, but remember, we're talking about a case where there is no mitzvah going on right now. He's just sitting. He's sitting at home and spacing out and obsessing, being nervous. So, hay torid v'hay loy torid. There's no just arbitrary ptur for a person who's getting married in the near future. The point is, because a person marrying a first timer is nervous, it's hard for him to clear his mind for Kriya Shema. But a person who's marrying a widow is not nervous. Now the Rishon is stressed. While the actual activities are going on, he'll be potter too. But here, the whole point is that we're exempting him beforehand because he's nervous with what's going to be.
What if the guy is OCD?
What's that?
What if the guy is obsessive compulsive? Like he really...
Oh, that we'll see now. Let's see. So the Gemara says, he's asking, what happens if you have a guy who's not marrying a virgin? But he's nervous anyways. He likes to be nervous. He's nervous when he goes to buy a suit, and he's nervous when he marries widows too. Maybe he has experience and he has good reason to be nervous. So, well, what will happen with such a guy? So the Gemara says, Imishum tirda, if it's the nervousness that exempts him, afilu tavas finosa bayam. The Gemara takes it a step further. Why limit it to a chasen? If you're saying that besides the exemption of Isaac b'mitzvah, there's another exemption of a person who's got too much on his mind, he can't focus. Oh, exactly. That's exactly what we're talking about here. A person whose ship sank at sea should also be pater. That's a guy who just had a loss on the stock market. That person whose ship sank at sea has a lot of on his mind right now. If you're saying that nervousness is reason for exemption, why are you limiting it to a chasen? V'chitem al chanami, so maybe you'll say, right, anytime a person's got a lot on his mind, he's pater. Aloma Omar Rabbi Abba Bar Zavda Omar Rav. Why did Rabbi Abba? Why did Rabbi Abba Bar Zavda say in the name of Rav? Ovel Chayev Bekol Hamitzvah Samuras Batero. An Ovel, a mourner, he's also got things on his mind. He's in grief. But it says he has to fulfill all the mitzvahs of the Torah, chutz min tefillin, except for tefillin. We're talking about an oinim. Oh, that's right. We're talking about a first day. Sharei ne'emar bohem te'em. What's that?
An oinim doesn't
have to do any mitzvahs. An oinim doesn't have to do any. Right. But there's a special p'tor for tefillin on the whole first day. I'm not going to get now into the details of it. We'll see. There's two different dinim. There's oinim, which is until the kavura, and then there's special dinim of the first day. But we'll leave it for now. It's not really our point here. Now, shenemar bohen pe'er, because tefillin are referred to as splendor. Shenemar, as it says, pe'er chachavusha lecha, your splendor is upon you. So splendor is incongruous with the mourner, but all of the mitzvahs he has to do, even though he's grieving. So the Gemara answers, no, not just anything on your mind exempts you. Hasam tari tirda de mitzvah. When the thing that's on his mind is a mitzvah, then you're exempt. Hacha tari tirda de rishus. But when you're just busy with optional preoccupation, then you're not exempt. Or, in other words, even if it is related to a mitzvah, let's say, like you said, a person is marrying a widow, or a person is about to do any other mitzvah, and he's nervous because he's a nervous type. We say no. In order to be exempt on account of being nervous about a mitzvah, it has to be warranted nervousness. Because again, there's a chiddush here. The initial pasuk exempted a person who's engaged in a mitzvah, who's actually doing a mitzvah now. We're taking it a step further. We're saying, you know what? Being preoccupied with a mitzvah is also included in that concept. But that already has to be what Chazal deemed legitimate preoccupation. Well, note something. Rashi asks an interesting question. We say that a mourner is chayiv, even though he's grieving. Isn't mourning a mitzvah? Isn't avelus a chiyuv? Avelus is a chiyuv too. So Rashi says something very cold, but which makes our point. Rashi says, no, nobody commanded him to be sad. He's only commanded to do the acts of avelus, to sit on the floor and not wear shoes. But nobody said he has to be sad. You hear that? It's an interesting chiddush. But Rashi doesn't mean to say that the person's not sad. What Rashi means to say is, or that it's not legitimate to be sad. Rashi says the mitzvah is not the feeling. That's Rashi's point. The mitzvah is not the feeling. The feeling is a natural feeling, which the Torah acknowledges, and even will bolster with commanding you to do certain activities. But the mitzvah is not the feeling. Okay? That is something that comes natural to you, and okay, fine, we grant you that. But that's not the mitzvah.
So what is the point of the formality?
What's that? Rashi says, showing honor to the dead. That's what Rashi says. It's covered for the mace. Very interesting approach.
I think that really, the thing that I'd like to know globally, it makes a lot of sense. Like, basically, it's the mitzvah of Kabbalah Soma, Mofa Shamayim. We're saying, like, no matter what activity you're involved in, either with your body, you know, like, or with your mind, you know, like your emotions, whatever, you have to be able to set it aside for a minute, you know, and be able to switch into
exactly.
Gear of Almohut Shamayim. The only exceptions would be when you're just involved in another, you know, special little circumstances when you're already in my service, either in your
exactly.
Body or in your mind, In those cases, continue doing what you're doing.
There, you captured it perfectly. That's exactly the way the Lamaisli Rishonim sum it up. They say, the preoccupation that exempts you is only a preoccupation that you're commanded to be busy with. A person is actually in Hashem's service right now, we say that the chiyuv of mitzvah of Kriyat Shema doesn't kick in. So therefore, if you're actually busy doing a mitzvah, you're certainly exempt. But even if you're not doing the mitzvah, but Hashem says, this is a mitzvah, then the very fact that I tell you to do it requires you to be busy thinking about it beforehand, you're also exempt. But if you're just thinking about it because you're a nervous type, then yes, it is expected of you, just like it's expected of a person who just suffered a big business loss, to be able to clear his mind and recite Kriyat Shema. Any other situation also, if you are nervous about it, but we don't deem that to be a mitzvah necessity, then you have to. It's incumbent upon you to clear your mind and do the mitzvah. Rashi says that with a chassan, it's actually the other way around. The chassan, yes, we want him to be thinking about it because he's new at the game, and you have to prepare yourself. You do have to prepare yourself mentally, and that is actually part of what the mitzvah entails. Okay. Now, skip this line. Skip the next line, right under the Aleph. So, okay. So, what are we seeing here? All this was really just Beis Shammai's argument, right? Beis Shammai is saying, don't go and learn from the pasuk that says on your travel on your road that you can do it in any position, because that those words in your travels on the road are needed for a very specific drasha. It's from there that we derive the principle of oisik b'mitzvah pater min ha-mitzvah. A person who's engaged in a mitzvah is pater, because if you're traveling for a mitzvah, you're pater. So if so, we turn back to Beis Hillel now. At the end of all this, we turn back to Beis Hillel and we say, okay, so how do you agree with this drasha? We still also agree. We derive from here, you travel on the road, you're chayev, but not if you're busy with a mitzvah. So if so, how do you derive from here that you can say kriyash in any position, even when you're walking? Beis Hillel Amri, Beis Hillel say, you're right. We can't use it for a drasha. Certainly that pasuk is coming to teach that if you're engaged in a mitzvah, you're potter. But you're right, the Torah means to denote that you're potter if you're engaged in the mitzvah. You're only chayv if you're engaged in your own activities. But how does the Torah express it? After all, the words of the Torah are, if you're traveling on the road, say Kriyat Shema. Right? So yes, learn from that whatever you want, but don't ignore the words. The Torah says that a person says Kriyat Shema while he's traveling. So there you go, there you have it. He's traveling, he's sitting on a horse, and he says Kriyat Shema. Or he's walking, and he says Kriyat Shema. So from there we derive that position makes no difference. Okay.
How is that translated to today's high-speed driving?
What's that?
And you can't concentrate on the words if you're driving in a very busy situation.
Okay. So first, the truth is that in general we have to qualify this. We're going to see later in the Gemara that this does not apply for the first pasuk. If a person is traveling or whatever it is, walking, etc., the first pasuk you have to stand still and be stationary, not be moving. The next psukim, since kavanah is not as critical for the psukim after that, it's okay to say it while you're on the road. So seemingly the same would apply with driving too, because for the first pasuk where you really need the proper kavanah, you do have to stop. But after that, you're able to have enough kavanah, you're able to carry on a conversation even when you're high-speed driving, and that extent of kavanah is enough, at least in these situations, for the continuation of Kriyat Shema. Okay, so just, again, we'll just put into perspective, we already touched on this, but just to put into perspective the principle of Oisik B'mitzvah Potter Min HaMitzvah, that a person engaged in a mitzvah is potter from other mitzvahs that come his way. So as the Olam already brought up, this can't be, this has to be qualified, right? If we said a person who's wearing tzitzis is not automatically potter from anything else that comes his way, because you have to be actually busy with the mitzvah. You have to be busy with the mitzvah in order to be potter. The Rishonim derived this from a couple of instances. One example is that the Gemara says that a person, here we can take it even further than tzitzis. But the Gemara says that a person who finds a lost object is benefiting materially by taking it and preserving it for the owner. How? Because he takes it home, he keeps it at home, Then he's an oisik b'mitzvah, right? Then he's busy with the mitzvah. And then he's potter for giving tzedakah. And he ani knocks at the door, and he says, "I don't have to give you tzedakah because I'm preserving an aveda for the owner. I have an aveda that I found when I still lived in Yerushalayim 10 years ago. Probably not going to find the owner waiting for the owner to come. So does that mean that you potter? Found an aveda, you stored it at home, and that's it. You potter. You don't have to do any other mitzvahs. So." The Mefarshim note that the Gemara says about that, yeah, but it's not so common. What do you mean it's not so common? Anytime a person finds a lost object, keeps it at home, he doesn't have to give tzedakah. But the answer is that no, it's there that the Rishonim make the point. You're not putter as long as you have the Avida at home, even though you're fulfilling a mitzvah all that time. You're putter only when you're busy tending to the Avida, to the lost object. Let's say it's a chicken, and you're busy feeding it, or something like that. Clothing, and you're busy shaking it out, or something like that. Then you're putter if a poor man happens to knock on the door at that time. So here also, the Mefarshim say with regard to all these things, you're not putter when you're fulfilling a mitzvah. You're putter when you're actually busy with a mitzvah, whether in thought, preparation, or actually doing it. The next fundamental discussion is taking it a step further. What happens if you're actually busy with a mitzvah, and another mitzvah comes along, and you can do that other mitzvah without it conflicting with the first? What happens then? This is a big machlokes. This is a big machlokes. Lamaisa, the bottom line of the Shulchan Aruch is, Rabbah, is that if you can manage to do the second mitzvah without too much bother, you have to do it. But if there's going to be a lot of bother involved, you can skip it, even if it's possible to do both. It's possible to do both, but if it's going to be bothersome, you can skip it. You don't have to do the other mitzvah, you can just let it pass. Okay, Lamaisa, each case has to be addressed on its own because it gets very fine in determining how it works in each particular case.
What about a doctor's patients? Would that be the tour?
A doctor seeing patients. A doctor seeing patients. What's that?
It's
Lamasa. Essentially, I would assume that yes. Well, there's a double question here. First of all, we have to address whether the fact that a person is being paid for it turns it into an occupation as opposed to a mitzvah in a halachic sense. Meaning, a doctor who's seeing patients for pay certainly can be fulfilling mitzvahs if he's having the thoughts of chesed while he's doing it, etc., etc. But in the halachic sense, there is a concept of, if you're being paid for it, the halachic definition of this deed is parnas as opposed to a mitzvah. Even though it could be a mitzvah too. But that's not necessarily so, because I'm just kind of thinking out loud. Because we find that, for example, seifrim, essentially, and I'm not talking about mice now, but essentially, seifrim are potter while they're busy writing their Teretz Tefillin and Mezuzahs. That's also like you asked about the tying strings for tzitzis. So it's possible that essentially a doctor would be potter. How to apply this lamaisa? I'm not sure. Yeah. Okay. One other thing I just want to note here is this is a point that has a lot of significance. Is that as we've seen here, even going to a mitzvah, preparing for a mitzvah, the preparatory stages of a mitzvah are included in the patur of Oisek b'mitzvah, even though you're not actually doing the mitzvah then. And just in general, it's important to know that a lot of times the preparation for a mitzvah is almost more significant than the mitzvah itself. I'll give an example. Well, significant, I mean, involvement-wise. Give an example. Buying an esrig is a much bigger deal than doing the mitzvah of esrig. What's the mitzvah of esrig? The mitzvah deraisa of esrig. It involves an instant, right? You pick up the esrig and your yaitz. Derabanan involves 7 instants. Right? 7 times you pick it up. Buying the esrig can often involve much more time than all that put together, much more effort, etc., etc. A person might say, so much time, which is not even a mitzvah, into that instant and then I was yitzah. So much time and effort. But here we're seeing that no, the preparation is mamish bunched with the mitzvah. The preparation is mamish bunched with the mitzvah. And even more than that, often, the preparation itself might be even a greater mitzvah than the mitzvah itself. How could that be? When you get all busy, and it's important to you to get the right one, and you put in the efforts, searching it out, and doing it right, whatever mitzvah it is, right? What are you doing? You're expressing care for the mitzvah. What's that? Why do you care about the mitzvah? Because what Hashem says is important to you. You're actually engaged in Yirat Shamayim. To realize that that's a mitzvah in and of itself. There's a mitzvah of Esrig, and there's another mitzvah called Yirat Shamayim. It's mitzvah d'oraisa. No less important a mitzvah than taking an Esrig. So all the preparation for the Esrig is a cue of the mitzvah of Yirat Shamayim.
The person has a choice, like between either going into the shuk and picking out his perfect Esrig, or getting in a box like the badatz, and checked by, I don't know who, like the Gadol Hador.
And sitting and learning.
So which is a better... Oh, you could say, like, it's
the answer to that question is, tough question. What were you going to say?
Prioritizing.
It's tough. We find different approaches to these things. We found different great people treating this in different ways. I would assume that what I would take the authority to say is that you can go about either way with the right intent. For example, that Rabosh Arieli of the Mir Yeshiva, I don't know if you've heard of him, he's probably one of the biggest Magidei Shiurim in the world, because he's got a shiur of about 800 people, and they're not directed to the shiur, meaning in every yeshiva it's set up who goes to which shiur, right? In Mir it's not like that. People come, he has a shiur of about 800 people who chose his shiur. He basically is a person who's learning around the clock, and the way it works is often the Esrig dealers, it's good for their business when they can show who buys from them, right? So they go to different Rabbanim, they bring their Esrogim to the Rabbanim, they bring a whole stash for the Rabbanim to check with. So when Rabbi Shariel finally made it into that status, when he was bought the Esrogim by an Esrig dealer, he remarked, he said, "No, I figured if for a few years I sit and learn instead of searching for the Esrig, I'll end up being able to do both. They'll bring me the best Esrogim while I sit and learn here." That's one approach. On the other hand, we certainly found very pious and righteous people who spent a lot of time putting the effort in. It boils down to the general question of how much time do you put into learning Musar, and do you put more time into preparing for tefillah than for learning? These are things that each person has to juggle according to his situation.